All right, the first case this morning is United States v. Ray et al.
May it please the court, counsel, good morning. My name is Vilja Balacious and I represent Mr. Ivan Rea. The evidence was insufficient to support a guilty verdict for the continuing criminal enterprise count in this case. The government did not present evidence that Mr. Rea supervised, managed, or organized at least five people at any given time. The government confuses wholesale customers with couriers. Mr. Rea had customers and Mr. Rea had wholesale customers, but they had two different roles and they were not the same people at the same time. Pablo Chavez worked for Mr. Rea at first. This was in late 2005. At some point, he became a wholesale customer. And at the time of his arrest in August of 2006, he was a wholesale customer of Mr. Rea. Jose Nunez began distributing methamphetamine that he received from Mr. Rea sometime in the middle of 2005. But he did not start actually working for Mr. Rea until later. We know for sure he started working for Mr. Rea at the time that he moved in to the house on Girard in February of 2006. And this is according to the testimony of Sarah Solano. At some point later on, Edgar Badillo Rangel also moved into that house, and those two worked for Mr. Rea. Sarah Solano testified about the details of the drug distribution. She never said that anyone else was working for Mr. Rea other than Jose Nunez and Edgar Badillo Rangel. She named several customers, but no other employees. And one of the customers that she named was Pablo, or Pablito, and that was Chavez's first name, Pablo Chavez. There was no testimony that Jose Nunez was either delivering drugs or otherwise working for Mr. Rea until February of 2006. And Sarah Solano did not hold back. She testified in great deal of detail about what was going on. And according to her testimony, she started working for Mr. Rea as a waitress in his restaurant in October or November of 2005. And had Pablo Chavez been also working for Mr. Rea at the same time that Jose Nunez was, we would have heard it from Sarah Solano, but she gave no indication that anyone else was working for Mr. Rea at the same time. Now, Sarah Solano passed messages to Mr. Rea because they lived in the same house. The only other testimony that of her involvement, actual involvement in the drug distribution, was that she bought foil and coffee and mustard at Mr. Rea's request. However, she never handled drugs or money, arranged any drug deals. She was basically present when Mr. Nunez, Mr. Rangel, and Mr. Rea received drugs, cut them, cooked them, packaged them, weighed them, distributed them. Now, the government says that Mr. Medina and Mr. Dunlop were also managed or organized by Mr. Rea, but they were wholesale customers of Mr. Rea, and there is no evidence that they worked for Mr. Rea in any capacity. The evidence was that Mr. Rea was one of the sources of methamphetamine for them. The testimony was also, the government's evidence also showed that both Mr. Medina and Mr. Dunlop had other sources. So the government has shown no authority for the proposition that wholesale customers are subordinates within the meaning of the CCE statute.
Well, how do you distinguish? I mean, they're both dealing, they're involved in drug sales. How do you distinguish between a wholesale customer and just a regular user?
A wholesale customer from someone who's a courier. A courier doesn't deal for himself. A courier doesn't make a profit. A courier gets paid for his work. Now, what the case law shows is that you can have someone distributing for someone, but within the context of the CCE, they have to be basically working for and in concert with and being directed by the kingpin. That's what the kingpin statute is about.
I thought there was evidence of that in this case, that Rhea was from time to time known to front drugs to some of these mid-level distributors that you're saying are not part of the CCE.
Right, and fronting is something that would put them into a conspiracy, perhaps, but not in the context of, it doesn't work in the context of a CCE.
Why not?
Because if you look at the cases, there's always a hierarchy. People answer to each other. They share profits. There was none of that here.
Didn't he also direct their activities and direct subsidiary buyers to them?
What he did is he either sold to them or he refused to sell to them. And that's a typical seller-buyer relationship. He collected his debts. And at one point, he cut Mr. Medina out because Mr. Medina wasn't paying him. I believe he also did that to another wholesale distributor. He stopped selling to him and started selling to that person's customers. That is a typical buyer-seller relationship. That is not the type of relationship that case law shows falls within the CCE statute. The district court here allowed a number of hearsay statements. Allowed the government's witnesses to make a number of hearsay statements regarding an out-of-court declarant's source of methamphetamine as being Mr. Rhea. And there were, I believe, at least five instances of that. One of them was the government elicited from an agent that someone he arrested told him that his source was Mr. Rhea. That is a clear violation of the Confrontation Clause. Counsel objected, and this is just a back doorway of showing that agents believe the defendant was guilty. It's not a harmless error because the government's evidence was basically testimony. They did not arrest Rhea with drugs. There were no drugs found in his home. So the government was just piling on hearsay. It was used as corroboration. It wasn't merely cumulative. And I see that my time is basically up, so unless someone has a question.
Rebuttal. You have time, but it's just rebuttal time.
Okay.
You can go on. You can use your rebuttal. You don't have to.
I think I'd like to save some time for rebuttal. I can just add that, as I stated in my brief, there was the other statements were not by people who were co-conspirators at the time, and they were not made in furtherance of the conspiracy. Explaining a sequence of events is not an exception to the hearsay rule, and explaining why the government did what it did is also not an exception to the hearsay rule. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Garst?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Hannah Garst. I represent Jose Medina. Mr. Medina's appeal can be summed up into two arguments. First, there's insufficient evidence that an agreement forming a conspiracy existed between Mr. Medina and Mr. Rhea, or Mr. Medina and Stu, as the government has put forward in its brief. Second, the district court incorrectly calculated Mr. Medina's criminal history score because he was no longer a part of the conspiracy on September 22nd, the date of the Hendricks County conviction. Now, the district court should have granted Mr. Medina's Rule 29B motion because the government presented insufficient evidence that there was an agreement to distribute drugs between Mr. Medina and Mr. Rhea. We would submit that Mr. Medina was merely a buyer of Mr. Rhea and that they had a buyer-seller agreement. Now, the government is relying on a fronting of drugs, fronting of methamphetamine. And the problem here is that it's in reliance on Ms. Solano's testimony. Now, Ms. Solano testified that Mr. Rhea stated, she overheard Mr. Rea state that he wanted some of Mr. Medina's customers and that he would front him some pounds. Now, looking at the testimony as a whole, it seems likely that Mr. Rea did front to Mr. Medina at some point, especially viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the government, which we understand that's the standard here. However, the problem is when you look at the drugs that were fronted, there's a lot of information that we don't know. We don't know when it was fronted. We don't know if it happened more than one time. We don't know how much was fronted. All we know is that at some point Mr. Rea was sending Mr. Nunez in to deliver drugs as well as collect money. Now, in that statement, the government would like the court to assume that because Mr. Rea was continually giving drugs to Medina, that he was continually fronting. However, Ms. Solano did not testify to that. And we would submit that a one-time fronting, it seems that the jury could assume that there was a fronting at some point, but that does not equal continual fronting. And when looking at the cases, they state that not all credit sales support an agreement to distribute drugs. We would submit that when there's a conspiracy, when the conspiracy conviction rests on fronting, that the government must provide the court with something more than a generalized statement that, in this case, Mr. Rea fronted drugs to Mr. Medina. Now, even if you consider that
I thought her testimony also indicated that Mr. Rea wanted access to your client, Mr. Medina's client base, essentially. Isn't that the import of her testimony about the conversations she overheard between the two of them? That, you know, not only was there this fronting going on, and the implication is that it was on more than one occasion, because she refers to conversations that she overheard routinely at the restaurant, but also that Rhea was acutely aware of and interested in Mr. Medina's client base.
Well, she did testify that Mr. Rea stated that I would like to have some of your clients. However, there's no evidence that Mr. Rea had any access to any of Mr. Medina's clients. He wasn't directing him. There was no share of sales. There was no evidence that she presented other than the fact that he wanted Mr. Medina because he knew Mr. Medina had
a network.
Assumably.
Right. That's a classic conspiracy.
Well, Your Honor, we would submit that the mere fact that he wants his customer base is different than wanting access and control over that customer base. It seems like, although it is an illegitimate business in the drug trade, it seems reasonable to say, hey, I'm wanting your business because I know you're going to have to buy from me a lot of pounds of methamphetamine in order to fulfill your customers, to fulfill that. So to state that is one thing, but then to have evidence of that is another. Now, you know, the Ms. Solano's testimony, it's clear that Mr. Rea was supplying a large amount of drugs to Mr. Medina. However, when you look at the operation, we would submit that Mr. Medina had no stake whatsoever in Mr. Rea's business. He received no proceeds from Mr. Rea. Mr. Rea was not telling him how to handle his customers. He wasn't telling him how to obtain more customers. There was no delivery system. And in looking at that, we would submit that he is a wholesale buyer here. And the fact that there was a one-time fronting doesn't necessarily elevate this into conspiracy status. Furthermore, the government suggested that there's a conspiracy between Mr. Medina and Stu, and just to address that briefly, we believe that looking at the record, that's without support. Mr. Nicholas was buying from Stu, and when Stu could no longer provide him with the drugs that he was wanting, Stu then just introduced him to Mr. Medina, who was his dealer. Now, at that point, it created a buyer-seller relationship between Mr. Medina and Mr. Nicholas, and the testimony was that Mr. Nicholas paid for all the drugs in cash. Now, the government contends that Stu and Mr. Medina were on the same side of the transaction. The problem here is that to be on the same side of the transaction, there must be some investment, incentive, or stake in the sale of drugs. And here, the only link Stu had after the introduction was when Mr. Nicholas could not get a hold of Mr. Medina, which he said was few and far between, that he would call Stu. Now, that mere phone call could have been something which I will say there, it's not in the record what that phone call contained, but it could have been something as simple as, do you know where Medina is? We don't know. We would submit that that would not support a conspiracy conviction on that alone. As far as the criminal history, we believe that it comes down to the question of Mr. Medina, whether he was a part of the conspiracy on September 22nd. Now, the case itself presents an unusual fact scenario because his dealer, Mr. Rea, was the one who actually kicked him out of the conspiracy by at the meeting with him, with Mr. Medina and Mr. Dunlop, announcing that he's taking over the tire shop. And we would assert that Mr. Medina's presence at that meeting would be the demonstration of withdrawal from the conspiracy. Because his link to the drugs was severed by Mr. Rea making that statement that I'm taking over the tire shop, and then a week later, Mr. Rea and Mr. Nunez showing up and saying, Mr. Dunlop, you're no longer to deal with Mr. Medina whatsoever. His mere presence acted as an affirmative step to defeat the conspiracy's purpose, which in this case was to sell drugs and to make money. And after that point, there was no evidence whatsoever that Mr. Medina ever received drugs from Mr. Rea or Mr. Nunez, and that was based on the testimony of Ms. Solano, who testified that she never saw an exchange of drugs in the restaurant itself.
Given the government's concessions with respect to the sentencing error, what, if anything, is left?
Well, in order, because it is plain error review, with the 2 points, that only gets him down to 7 criminal history points. And in order to have plain error and to show that he would possibly receive a different sentence under a different range, we have to get to 6 points. And so in order for him to go down a full level on the criminal history category, he would have to not be a part of the conspiracy on September 22nd. And that's the date that he was convicted in Hendricks County, which gave him additional points.
Now, the judge made a remark at the end of the sentence. Sentencing inquiry said he was struck by the fact that at the time of the offense, Mr. Medina was on probation. Does that have any independent relevance to the sentence?
Well, I think it's a view into what the judge was thinking. But if he is not, the problem is, yes, that he was wrong about the probation part. But if he was not wrong about, if this court finds that he was a part of the conspiracy on September 22nd, it's an independent part. And when looking at the sentencing as a whole, that was one small part of a lot of consideration, a lot of different areas that he considered. So I think it is important when looking at this argument in and of itself, but I think looking at that, just being honest, like looking at that in the whole, I'm not sure it wasn't the one thing that tipped the scales. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Blackington.
Good morning. May it please the court, I think that most of the differences that we have in this case don't concern an interpretation of the law. They concern the facts of the case. And that dynamic starts when we discuss the sufficiency of the evidence with Mr. Rea and whether he supervised 5 or more people in the CCE and count. And the evidence shows that he does. The evidence shows that he supervised Jose Nunez. He ordered him to deliver methamphetamine to Eden Soto and Luis Medina. He ordered him to collect money from Medina. He ordered him to help cut, recook, and package methamphetamine. Edgar Badillo, he ordered him to help him cut, cook, and repackage methamphetamine. Sarah Solano ordered her to, directed her to go out and get baggies, aluminum foil, things that were done incident to the cutting, recooking, and bagging of methamphetamine. Pablo Chavez was a drug runner, and the trial testimony of Eden Soto in particular indicates that Mr. Chavez, contrary to the assertions of opposing counsel, began in the conspiracy around October of 2005 and continued to serve as a drug runner, delivering methamphetamine to Soto up until August of 2006. And that Chavez was maybe, with respect to Mr. Soto, a drug runner, delivering it to him, and maybe he had an independent customer base as well. And he performed two different functions in the conspiracy, but he was still acting under the direction of Mr. Rea. And then Eden Soto testifies about three or four other drug runners. He doesn't know their names, but those are people who also served as drug runners for Ivan Rea and distributed methamphetamine to Soto at Rea's direction. So there we have seven or eight people. We could have an interesting academic debate maybe about whether Mr. Medina was under Rea's control, particularly because Rea comes in and says, "You owe me money for meth. I'm taking over your business." I mean, to me, that shows some control as well. But since we've got seven or eight people, we can stop there. And counter to the arguments in the appellant's brief, the evidence supports the conclusion that Nunez didn't simply replace Chavez after his arrest in August of 2006, but that he was involved in the drug conspiracy and working for Mr. Medina well before that, collecting money as early as December 2005, and that he actually began dealing for Mr. Rea as early as June or 2005. And I note in page 17 of my brief there's a typographical error, and I said June 2007. It's actually 2005, and the transcript at pages 456 and 57 established that. With regard to the evidence with Mr. Medina and the conspiracy, there's more than a buyer-seller agreement, and there's more than fronting on one occasion. Sarah Solano's not in a position to tell. She's with Nunez when he goes to the tire shop to deliver methamphetamine to Medina. She's not in a position to say, was it, you know, which transactions was it fronted, which transactions was it cash in the barrel. But she hears Rea promising to front methamphetamine to Medina. She's with Nunez when he takes meth there. She overhears repeated arguments between Nunez and Medina about, you know, Medina's failure to pay for fronted methamphetamine. And we ultimately have this ongoing debt resolved to show fronting by Rea taking over the tire shop to satisfy that. So we have fronting and repeated fronting, I think, is a reasonable assertion. And we also have other factors. Rea reached out to Luis Medina to get his new methamphetamine market, to get Medina's clientele. Now, he's not getting those people directly, but we don't need to prove in a conspiracy that he's reaching out to get Medina's market so he can direct and control each of the people who are dealing for Mr. Medina. It's simply an agreement that Rea's providing meth to Medina so he can distribute methamphetamine to those people. And by reaching out and getting access to the people that Medina's dealing to, albeit indirectly, exerting indirectly distributing to them, it's proof of a conspiracy. Some of the other factors that this court's traditionally looked at when looking for circumstantial evidence of a buyer-seller agreement we have here. Sales of large amounts of methamphetamine, 2 pounds a week, prolonged cooperation, 17 months, standardized dealings. Most of the deals are at the tire shop, and they converse regularly at the restaurant about the business.
It was a sort of regularized amount on this frequency as well. Isn't that the case?
Yes, yes, Your Honor, that's correct. And we look at this agreement between Medina and Stu, perhaps, and there's more than just an introduction between, you know, Stu saying, hey, this is my buddy Stephen Nicholas, he wants to buy meth from you. There are instances where Nicholas can't get a hold of Medina, so he's got to call Stu, and Stu gets a hold of Medina and brokers the transaction. So that's why they're on the same side of those methamphetamine transactions. Going ahead to some of the other issues, hearsay statements about the source of methamphetamine. The members of the conspiracy make various statements to Eden Soto, Seferino Rodriguez, and other people that, you know, this is my methamphetamine source, this is Ivan Rea. And the thing that's important about that, this court has held in case law that I've cited in my brief, that statements that tend to show that somebody has a regular source of methamphetamine are in furtherance of the conspiracy, because they tend to indicate that, hey, I'm somebody that, you know, you can come to get methamphetamine. They show that the dealer who makes that type of statement has ready access to a good methamphetamine source. And one of the statements in particular, there's this Cholo who comes up, and he's the person that in the very beginning teaches Eden Soto how to deal methamphetamine. Cholo makes a statement to Soto, Michoacan would be a good contact for methamphetamine. Well, that's not hearsay. That's in furtherance of the conspiracy between Soto and Cholo. It's introducing them to a new methamphetamine source, which advances their agreement. And it's also not hearsay because it's not offered to prove the truth of the matter asserted in the statement. We're not introducing that to say, hey, Cholo's right, Michoacan would be a good source of methamphetamine. We're introducing because that statement from Cholo is what causes Eden Soto to meet with Ivan Rea 2 days later and reach out to him to provide him with methamphetamine. So it's a background fact that leads to his decision to approach Ivan Rea to obtain methamphetamine.
Mr. Blackington, could you help me with Chavez's statement? I have trouble understanding your explanation of that in the brief.
His statement to Agent Davis, is that the statement? Well, the defense strategy in this case, to a large degree, was to say, hey, look, you haven't made a case. You don't have any drugs on him, on Ivan Rea. And it shows what Agent Davis, and it also they, in the arguments to the jury, basically said that Agent Davis didn't do a thorough enough job in this case. And so it's offered to show what Agent Davis did during the course of his investigation, and that he did attempt to execute a controlled buy using Chavez, and it doesn't work. Now, while we're on that subject, if the let's say the court does find that that's inadmissible hearsay, I'd like to correct a statement that opposing counsel made in argument. In that statement, Pablo Chavez did not say to Agent Davis, this guy, Ivan Rea, is my source. He said, Michoacan is my source. And that's important in the harmless error analysis because it's Michoacan wasn't identified by name or photo and is some of the trial testimony elicited that Michoacan was kind of a common nickname for people who hailed from Michoacan, Mexico. So this particular defendant was not designated in that statement. It was generically Michoacan. And continuing with the harmless error analysis, there was cumulative evidence in this case about the point that Ivan Reyes supplied Chavez with methamphetamine. Sarah Solano and Eden Soto both identified Chavez as a drug runner for Rea, and Solano specifically testified that she saw Rea deliver the methamphetamine to Chavez that he took to Terre Haute and got arrested with. So harmless error, the evidence isn't terribly significant to the government's case. It's cumulative of other evidence. There's no evidence, other evidence that contradicted this statement of Chavez, so there's not a credibility determination where it's tipping the balance. And lastly, and most importantly in the harmless error analysis, this is a very strong case. There are five people that testified that they directly engaged in methamphetamine dealing with Mr. Rea, and there are wiretap phone calls where Mr. Rea is engaging in drug-related conversations where he's trying to deliver methamphetamine to Soto.
With respect to Mr. Chavez's statement, was there any cautionary instruction or limited instruction given to the jury?
There was not, Your Honor. Proceeding to some of the sentencing issues that have been discussed.
If I could, before we move off the hearsay issues in the case, is there any context somewhere in the record for the hearsay statements made by the co-conspirators? The hearsay introduced through the co-conspirators, not through the agent.
Okay.
But there are four separate statements that are being challenged here that you're defending on co-conspirator grounds. And it's unclear to me what the context of those hearsay conversations was. I mean,
okay.
In one case,
They're all sort of different, if I can, and I guess I could walk through all of them with you, but one of them, for instance, Seferino Rodriguez is getting methamphetamine from this person nicknamed Gavacho, and his name turned out to be Edgar Boiso Bernal. And the context of the statements are, you know, who are you getting your methamphetamine from? Gavacho identifies Ray at his source. And in one of the deals that Rodriguez has with Gavacho, Rea shows up at Gavacho's house to help facilitate the methamphetamine transaction.
So these conversations are being had in a transactional setting, apparently?
Some are in a transactional setting. Some are in the settings in Rea's restaurant where they're discussing their ongoing drug business, who's providing whom with methamphetamine, where can they get it, that type of thing. That I guess the context is different for all of the statements. Does that answer your question?
We're going to be able to tell that from the surrounding testimony?
I think if you look at the transcript, I think it'll be apparent, that was what was going on. These people weren't just simply sitting around having a beer someplace, chewing the fat about street hearsay and rumor. They're people who are engaged in dealing methamphetamine together. Mr. Rodriguez, for instance, was arrested with, if my memory's correct, about 9 ounces of methamphetamine. That methamphetamine came from Luis Bersino, and Bersino's brother, Jose, was in the car. And the evidence You know, of course, he's talking with Bersino. You know, who do you deal with? And he says, you know, Ivan Reyes. So I think that a review of the record will answer the questions.
Okay.
Going ahead to the sentencing issues, and we're I am passing over the firearms enhancement because it wasn't argued, but if the court has any questions, I'm happy to address it. I think it's pretty straightforward. With respect to Mr. Medina, there are the inclusion of these four criminal history points for convictions. And I think what's important to keep in mind here is Medina's convicted for false informing on September 22, 2006. So the question is, should he get 2 points because he's continuing to engage in the activities of the conspiracy after that arrest? The assertion of Mr. Medina's counsel is that he was kicked out of the conspiracy by Mr. Rea. There's no evidence that he was kicked out of the conspiracy. What the evidence is he was kicked out of his dealings with one particular customer, and that was William Dunlop. The facts are that, and the other testimony is that Stephen Nicholas continued to receive methamphetamine from him up until shortly before his arrest in March of 2007. And Sarah Solano also testified that for the entire time that she worked at the Mexican restaurant, which would have been until February 20th of 2007, that Medina remained involved in the conspiracy, that he continued to get methamphetamine from Ivan Reyes. So that places him in the conspiracy well after September 22nd. And lastly, there's no legal withdrawal from the conspiracy, of course. Legal withdrawal contemplates not only, I'm done, I'm out of here, guys. It contemplates the person taking some type of affirmative action to defeat the ends of the conspiracy. Usually that entails the person going to law enforcement. My red light's on.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
How much time? 1.5.
Okay, I won't talk for long then. Regarding the hearsay statements, Cholo was not a member of the conspiracy at the time of the statement, so this could not have been in furtherance of the conspiracy. Gordo was not a member of the conspiracy at the time of the statement. Gordo made the statement to, I believe it was Soto, because he was, or Rodriguez, one of them, because he was his friend and he told him everything, and that was the testimony. The government says that some of these statements weren't offered for the truth of the matter asserted. If they're not offered for the truth, then they're irrelevant. The only reason they're relevant and admissible is because they're so prejudicial, and it's the truth of the matter asserted. The defense was not an attack on Agent Davis, but an attack on the sufficiency of the evidence. And as far as identifying the source as Michoacan, the government impressed over and over again during the trial that Ivan Rea was Michoacan, and he was the only Michoacan. So this is not harmless error. It wasn't cumulative. The agent was saying that he knows who this big-time drug dealer is. As far as the Mr. Soto's testimony that Chavez was delivering for Rea, he did not testify that Chavez delivered for Rea until August of 2006. Soto's testimony was that the courier at first was Pablo Chavez, and then in 2006 and 2007, there were two new guys. And the fact that he said there were three or four couriers, that does not mean that there were three or four couriers in addition to Chavez, Nunez, and Padilla Rangel, but included those three. That's three or four. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Garst? We have about 1 minute, Ms. Garst.
Thank you, Your Honor. The government just stated that Ms. Solano was not in a position to say which transactions were fronted and which transactions were cash on a barrel. And, Your Honor, we would submit that that's the government's burden of proof, that they had to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that there was a conspiracy here. And although he stated that there was large standardized transactions, large quantity of drugs, and a long-standing relationship between the buyer and seller, United States versus Colon stated that there had to be more than that when looking at the evidence as a whole. There has to be more than those specific things because those can be equally plausible in a buyer-seller relationship as in a conspiracy relationship. So there has to be something to tip the scales. Second, the government stated that there was evidence showing that Stu brokered the transaction, and the transcript states, quote, government, were there times when you had difficulty getting a hold of Louise? Quote, not usually. I see my time is up. Thank you, Your Honors.
Ms. Garst, you took this case by appointment, did you not?
Yes.
You have the appreciation of the court, and thank you for your very fine representation of your client.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Case will be taken under advisement. And